Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, how are things going?
Things are good. Things are real good. Steeler season's over, so I have a little more free time. Maybe we'll bring you some more of these podcasts a little bit more regularly, start to dig into rookies and whatnot. Off-season for fantasy is kind of kicking in now.
Off-season is the best season, right?
Yeah, it is.
And actually, that is exactly what we're going to talk about. That's a good accidental segue by you, Williamson.
It wasn't accidental.
I'm not giving you credit for that one. We've got one of our favorite guests. We've had him on a few times. My dynasty worlds are colliding here. I've got both my partners in crime, Matt, you, of course, and then we've got Curtis Patrick from Pro Football Focus. He's the lead dynasty writer there, and also my partner in crime over at Dynasty Command Center. Curtis, how's it going?
It's fantastic, man. Breaking news like every couple hours. We had the college football championship game just last night, and that was, you know, you're rocking the Clemson hoodie here in the spirit. So many players that are going to be playing on Sundays and just a couple months from now that we got to watch. And it's almost like there's just news coming from every angle. And just when you start to think that, you know, okay, I'm going to take this piece of news and do this with it, something else changes. And we've got all these coaching dominoes and coordinator dominoes and free agency and the rookie draft. And it's just a beautiful mess right now. I love it.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the coaching thing. That's actually where I want to start with you guys. And it feels like, I don't know, maybe as dynasty players, maybe we're just a little more tuned in, or maybe it is the Sean McVay effect. That's what so many people are talking about, how he quickly, of course, turned the Rams around. And we've seen other coaches have a major impact on their teams, on their players. In the past, maybe we wouldn't have been following this coaching news as closely as we are, but that's kind of the state of the game right now. So far we've had three coaching hires, and Matt, I wanted to start with you just to get your general thoughts on these, and really what players are going to be impacted the most by these. So let's start with the Packers. They hire Matt LaFleur. He was, of course, the offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans for just 1 year. He does come from the Rams, where he coached under McVay for a year as well. What are your thoughts on that hire?
Yeah, and before that, he was with Shanahan in Atlanta, and before that, he was with McVay with the Redskins. So that's the tree to be on right now if you're a head coaching candidate, because if you watch the Titans offense last year, it wasn't like, wow, this is the brightest new coach in all the land. I mean, yes, Mariota began the season injured and finished the season injured, but do we think he's any better now than he was a year ago or two? I mean, is he taking giant steps forward? It took him a long time to realize what they have in Derrick Henry and how to use him, and then he became the focal point of the offense down the stretch, and that basically worked, but it's an interesting hire. I mean, he is jumping up the ranks of the coaches very, very quickly, almost on a year-to-year basis, promotion. And now, you know, is he going to challenge Aaron Rodgers? Is he going to change things? I tend to think he will. I mean, I don't know what kind of head coach he'll be, but I like the idea, and I think Rodgers has looked at the Shanahans and McVays around the league and thought, man, I wouldn't mind getting involved in an offense like that. And I think this is has his fingerprints all over it. So I think it helps the Packers for sure. I think Rodgers is going to like it. I don't know if he's a good head coach or not, but I think he's a good offensive mind.
Curtis, any thoughts on LaFleur?
We needed some kind of change in Packers country. I don't know that it really mattered who they hired as long as it was somebody offensive-minded that could go in and shake things up. I mean, because basically Davante Adams was – I mean, he was a home run if you invested in him, but – even Rodgers, just the stats this year compared to some of his bigger years, it wasn't really there. So I don't really know what LaFleur is going to bring, other than I can say I think he did a decent job of adapting the Titans offense this year based on what they had. I mean, I think the cupboards are a little bit more bare there than most dynasty fantasy players would want to admit. We didn't really see Corey Davis ascend. Delanie Walker got hurt, and so that crutch was gone, and – again, it just the balance between Lewis and Henry was back and forth. It just seemed like they were maybe feeling that thing out all season long. But, you know, he got good results. So, you know, if he's going to go into Green Bay and evaluate what they have and figure out what works, I mean, with Aaron Rodgers and Adams, you got a better start than what you had in Tennessee. So that's good. But I'm interested to see what he does with the running backs, because Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams both scored fantasy points. Both, you know, I think in dynasty circles, they carry a lot of different reputations between the two. But I think that's the thing that's a little concerning. If you're somebody that paid up for Jones, what does that look like for you with LaFleur there next year? Is he going to trust him? But, man, I wonder if he's going to let an OC call plays or if he's going to call plays. Seems like a lot for a guy that's ascended this rapidly.
Yeah, those are all good good points. And you kind of went back to look at the Tennessee Titans, and that's kind of what I'm wondering about. Derrick Henry, with his end of the season, has become a rapidly ascending dynasty value. He's up in, I think, the third or fourth round of dynasty startups, according to our latest ADP. And now he's lost this offensive innovator. And who knows where they're going to turn. I saw the name Dave Ragone thrown out. I don't think he has any experience as an offensive coordinator, so we don't necessarily know what he might bring either. But I already had concerns about Henry and his new lofty value. Now I have even more.
Yeah, they want to throw to backs. I mean, I don't know. I think he's definitely a dump if you can type of guy.
Derrick Henry?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on. The Buccaneers made a big hire. I think this is one most people are excited about. Bruce Arians, of course, former Arizona Cardinals head coach. He did wonders for David Johnson and the offense overall there in Arizona. He retired for just 1 year. He's back, and he'll get to coach Jameis Winston, Mike Evans. And I've already seen rumors, Williamson. People are somehow wishing and hoping Le'Veon Bell ends up in Tampa Bay. Is that the new dream landing spot now?
It's certainly a fit. I mean, we saw what Arians did with David Johnson. I mean, as an all-around player, runner, receiver, the Bucs would then be able to, you know, use an early pick or free agency money maybe on a little more O-line help. It's interesting. I think Arians is a good fit here. You know, we know he went from Pittsburgh to Indy, and Luck and Roethlisberger have a lot in common in terms of size, athleticism. I think Winston's in the same mold as both those guys. And then he goes to Arizona, has a lot of success with Carson Palmer, who wasn't as athletic as the first two, but was certainly a pocket downfield passer. I think Winston's going to throw deep and throw deep a lot. I think that's good news for Evans. I wonder what they'll do with DeSean Jackson now. I'd imagine he moves on. But Arians, a good offensive mind, well-respected around the league, will probably bring some stability to a culture that needs it. I think it's good news for this crew.
Curtis, I think the Arians hire is going to bring some dynasty hype to Evans and Winston. Are those guys you would look to sell high immediately? Are you hanging on to those guys? Are you even buying at what we can presume is going to be a new higher price?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you tossed me this one. Mike Evans immediately becomes a buy for me. I think he belongs back up in the top five based off of this hire. I mean, if you look at what Arians did for Larry Fitzgerald at the end of his career, using him in that big slot capacity, funneling 10-plus targets a game for multiple seasons in a row, I think Evans, I mean, you have to look at him as a potential overall wide receiver one year to year in an Arians offense from a redraft perspective if he's going to get that type of volume. Now, you could argue maybe that on a talent basis, Arians never had a number two with the talent in Arizona that Chris Godwin has. So how does that really shake out? But, I mean, as much as I like Chris Godwin, I mean, Evans has proven he's a red zone presence and a chain mover and a deep threat. He had a really great year this year. I mean, one of the league leaders in receiving yards. And there was just so much else going on in the league that, what last week everyone was talking about, how no one was talking about Evans, I think was the running joke on Twitter. But I think paying market price or even a little extra on Evans is certainly acceptable now. And he had been a guy that I'd been moving away a little bit from because of previous uncertainty with Winston and Godwin being there. I also think now the Tampa Bay offense becomes a place where you just start to throw some darts a little bit. Adam Humphrey should be moving on. So if Evans isn't going to be used in a big slot capacity and moved around like Larry Fitzgerald, and they keep that slot role open for a newcomer, that becomes an interesting piece. And then Ronald Jones, who's basically like a pariah amongst dynasty owners if they invested, you know, a top five rookie pick last year in him, which was ill-advised, but hey, you know, it's a sunk cost at this point. Maybe some new life being breathed in to his dynasty value, because as attractive as it would be to bring in Le'Veon Bell, especially for an older coach like Arians, who probably isn't going to have the patience to build for 4 or 5 years, maybe you bring that guy in. He might also have the wisdom and see the value of spending whatever available cap space the Bucs have on a higher impact position than running back. And maybe you see what you can get with Ronald Jones and another dart that they throw in the draft this year. So that's very interesting to me. But love the Arians hire for all the Buccaneers, especially the ones that we had already formerly loved.
Hey, Curtis, I thought that was a really good point, too, about how you said Arians changed what Larry did and made him much more of a slot. And just want to throw this out there to the listeners, too, because before that, he asked Reggie Wayne to do it. Then he had Hines Ward do it before that. So all shapes and sizes, he's creating great mismatches out of the slot and moving them around and having them do things that are untraditional for them.
All right, guys, the last hire that we have that's official so far is the Cardinals. Of course, Bruce Arians' former team, making a hire that I've seen many questioning. They bring in Cliff Kingsbury. He's the most recently the Texas Tech head coach. He got some attention in Texas Tech, but he didn't necessarily have a lot of success. I think I saw today that his best finish in the Big 12 was fifth overall. Of course, some tough competition, and Texas Tech is not a traditional power necessarily, but it's hard to see a coach going from fifth in the Big 12 to the NFL, even if you're talking about a struggling team like the Cardinals. Matt, what's your take on this one? Is this as risky as it looks?
Probably. I don't think it's a wonderful job. I don't know that people were beating down their door for to be the head coach of the Cardinals after they fired a guy a year after hiring him. But, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of spread principles, and you guys might probably know Kingsbury better than I do. They need more receivers, though. I mean, they may only have Christian Kirk, and that's about it, assuming Larry doesn't come back. I would think it's good for David Johnson as a receiver. I think Rosen will be the quick-minded, get-it-out-quick type of guy that this system would use, but he's kind of better under center than the shotgun, but I think he'll be fine. Interesting. I mean, I think they'll throw the ball.
Curtis, I know it's hard to really figure out what to expect from Kingsbury, who I don't believe he has any NFL coaching experience. But kind of the same question as we posed with the Tampa Bay situation. The pieces there are not nearly as proven as what we have with Winston and Evans. Josh Rosen, Christian Kirk, and then, of course, David Johnson. Are these guys potential dynasty buys for you?
I don't know. I would say maybe with Fitzgerald, it makes sense with the changing of the guard that they find a way to amicably move on from Larry Fitzgerald and that whole relationship. So that would presumably prop up Christian Kirk as the, you know, the guy that's going to get targets funneled his way. I'm just uncomfortable with this hire. I don't know that Kingsbury's been like a super agreeable personality, and that's kind of the stigma that's followed Josh Rosen as well. This is going to be like the smarmiest offensive meeting room in the league. And I just don't.
Since the Browns last year.
Yeah, that hits too close to home, man. But yeah, so really the only thing that I have for you with Kingsbury is, I mean, he's been in Arizona before. I mean, the team drafted him a year before they drafted Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, I think they were teammates at one point. And Kingsbury was maybe even potentially going to be a long-term option as a quarterbacker. They hoped that maybe he would be. So if nothing else, maybe, you know, he would have some passion around bringing that franchise back, and he would be bringing some energy. You just basically hope that him and Rosen can get on the same page and have that all-important play caller and quarterback trust and relationship that we're seeing around the league. I don't know that this is a place I'm targeting anyone from a dynasty standpoint. And I don't know it's a great place to sell from either, because I'm having a hard time imagining anyone's going to be excited about this. So does it really make sense to go sell David Johnson when he's probably already devalued because of the year he had in comparison to expectations? He's probably better off just holding him and then waiting to do something with him in August or September when it's like a lineup setting time.
The only move I could see doing is maybe Rosen in a super flex two quarterback league if people are mad at him after his rookie year. I sort of like the player a lot. Maybe you can get him at somewhat of a discount.
Well, and if nothing else, I mean, you have to think, even with little experience and a questionable, coaching history, Kingsbury has to be better for Rosen than Steve Wilks was.
Right, right.
And Mike McCoy. So hopefully we see that second year ascension, certainly not on the Jared Goff level and not even on the Trubisky level, but we've got to see something better from Josh Rosen. Let's move on, guys. We try not to be just a news and notes show, but Matt, I've got to ask you about Antonio Brown. We kind of hinted about it a little bit last week as far as we're just on to the second season of this Pittsburgh Steelers soap opera that starred Le'Veon Bell a year ago, and now it's a new leading man. Curtis actually brought something to my attention today. There's odds out that you can bet on which team Antonio Brown will be playing for next year. Matt, I don't know if you've seen this.
I haven't, but it's funny. I have a list. That's why I wanted to bring this topic up.
Okay, well, we can chat about it a little bit. But, Curtis, how far down the list was Pittsburgh? I believe they're, 10th or 12th on the list?
Wow. Yeah, of the teams that you could actually place a bet on, the Steelers were tied for last at 16-1 odds. So, I mean, the sports book's basically begging for you to bet that he's back in Pittsburgh, which is weird. I mean, usually the incumbent's in the top three in these types of props. So, you know, that just kind of led me to speculate with Ryan that, you know, maybe they know something either from him or from the agent, because that's pretty gutsy if they don't know something.
Did you say there's 16 teams you can bet on and the Steelers are amongst the worst? Their longest shot?
Yeah, there's 11 wow. teams, and Pittsburgh and Seattle are both, tied for last at 16-1 odds. Matt, who would you consider? You said you had a list. Who would you consider the favorite?
Yeah, I do a Steelers daily show that's now on hiatus because they got eliminated. But Friday, we kind of ended it with, let's go through every team and see who would be interested. And if the Steelers, what would you ask in return? And we're not going to go through all that right now. But what my partner and I, Dale, did was we looked at the salary cap room available. We had to make sure that they at least had some decent amount of cap space. So the Dolphins and Washington were two teams we kind of eliminated for that reason. We eliminated the AFC North. I don't think there's any chance they trade him within division. And I don't think they trade him to one of the better AFC teams. So I took the Colts out of the equation, too. I mean, like, they're not going to trade him to the Patriots. I feel pretty confident about that. So I then came up with seven teams. And in no particular order, I have Buffalo, the Jets, Denver. But if they sign Munchak, I bet he will not be interested in that situation. If he gets hired in Denver. Oakland, which I think is very possible. How about this one? Green Bay. San Fran and Arizona.
All right, so a lot of the teams you mentioned are on this list as available teams that you can bet on. The Jets are the favorite, 3-1. 3-1.
What if they sign AB and Bell? They could.
I still don't know if Sam Darnold can put up fantasy numbers even with those guys around him. I mean, I guess give us a little bit of an insider take. What's the talk there as far as what the price might be in a trade?
Yeah, what we were coming up with was I don't think they'll get a top 10 pick. So like a lot of these teams I mentioned are picking pretty high in the draft. But I do think they could definitely get that early second from one of these teams. You know, Buffalo, the Jets, San Fran, Arizona. And I would think that the Steelers would be really interested in a first year or a first contract type player. You know, like give me Fred Warner, you know, a good active linebacker from the Niners and that very early second and maybe a future third. I think if you're dealing with Green Bay or Oakland that has multiple firsts, I would think you would ask for something in the 20 range and a third. You know, something like that, maybe.
Okay. That seems reasonable, certainly.
Yeah.
And without, you know, it goes without being said that by Juju, by James Washington, mm-hmm. these are players you need to be highly aggressive to acquire. Juju, it's probably too late, honestly. I mean, you're probably paying top three wide receiver prices on him, but maybe James Washington is still a gettable target.
I think that's fair.
All right, guys, let's move on to our next segment. I kind of hinted at this at the beginning. We're going to talk about the offseason. The offseason is now here, of course, for everybody. I think all of our fantasy leagues are over. I know our buddy Chris Wessling plays in a league that goes throughout the entire season, including the playoffs, but those are few and far between. We're all in offseason mode, and we've got Curtis here to talk about that. So, Curtis, the offseason is here. Just kind of from a personal standpoint, how do you feel about that? As a dynasty rider, a fantasy rider, and, of course, a fantasy football player, is the offseason something you welcome, or are you already missing that weekly grind?
I welcome it. It's right now, this kind of 30 days that we're in during the playoffs, it's actually kind of stressful because I feel immense pressure to simultaneously look back at what happened this season and also look forward to next season in order to advise people on the moves that we want to make. I mean, we've already talked about who are some guys that maybe we'd buy in some of these coaching situations. The dust hasn't even settled from what happened this year. The thing that I've really been challenging myself on is not to rely as heavily on what happened, you know, looking forward to 2019. 2018, it doesn't matter as much. I mean, when we have all of these coaches displaced, there's going to be a lot of new play callers in place, new coordinators, skill players with different quarterbacks, etc. I mean, so to start with what happened in 2018 as a place for predicting 2019, it's a little bit irresponsible. And I think oftentimes rankings and projections start there. And you almost have to start from scratch instead. And doing that while still trying to give advice can feel like a lot of pressure at times. But I mean, I welcome the challenge, and obviously everyone's just trying to improve their team. So from a writing standpoint, kind of going back, looking for anyone that stands out on production versus maybe what a preseason ranking would have been back in August when I was looking at it, making sure that I have correctly assessed injury situations, looking at free agents, who are the UFAs, who are the RFAs, which teams have options on players. Those are all things that you're kind of doing over these couple weeks while simultaneously looking at the rookie class and starting to figure out what are some of the prime landing spots position by position by position. And, yeah, so that's kind of what you're doing as a writer. A lot of that overlaps with what I'd be doing as a dynasty owner. The only extra layer that I might add is instead of doing all that macro analysis – in a micro, I guess, capacity, looking at each league, each team that I have, did I meet expectations this year, or did I fall short? And if I did fall short, what was the reason? Was it injury? Okay, I got to make myself a note. Don't freak out and rebuild just because you fell short of expectations if it was injury-driven, because, you know, you might be getting those players back, and you don't need to feel that panic. But if you look at a team and you start getting uncomfortable with your depth, or uncomfortable with your rookie assets, now you got to have a plan of attack for what are you going to do between now and free agency. This is a critical month to month and a half where you can maybe make some trades, especially in including rookie picks that become a lot harder once we get all the combine information and some free agency has elapsed and players are in those new spots. So you can't be lazy. If you're excited about the offseason but just need a break, you got to convince yourself to grind because you're missing one of the prime trade windows of the whole dynasty season.
Curtis, quick question for you, because you said that 30-day window that we're in, playoff time. Do you agree that because all eyes are on every game, that this is a great time for a player to spike or fall? I mean, it's just everyone's watching. It's not like there's 11 games going on at once.
Oh, yeah. It's just – an extreme example of the island game effect that we even see during the year.
Yeah.
And DFS has, of course, you know, bled over into dynasty valuation there a little bit. You see people winning a lot of money based off of this Thursday night, you know, performance or Sunday night performance at the end of a small slate or something. And it just becomes something that people are talking about. We remember the big games. You remember that Derrick Henry had four touchdowns this year. If you watch that game, you'll never forget that game. That's always something that's informing your value of that player moving forward. And you get a player that gets hot during the playoffs and games that really matter when all eyes are on them and there's nothing else to talk about on Twitter or in your leagues. I mean, it absolutely matters. So you're spot on with that. And it's something that you can leverage either way. You know, you can be on both sides of that. You know, you can see that player busting out and maybe you get a sense that, you know, the dynasty owner of that player in your league is going to want to sell high. All right, we'll go buy him. Just make sure that you negotiate that his value of high is in line with what you think high value is for that player. And you could go in another league and sell the exact same player. So all it does is create market opportunity. And I think this could be important for later in the show or just a general theme. We often want to force players into buy and sell buckets. And there might be times when that's appropriate, but really every player is a buy and a sell, right? I mean, everything's got a price.
Right.
Everything's got a price. And league to league, what you're willing to pay could change based on lineup settings and how many players you have to start and the scoring settings. So, you know, maybe a challenge as you enter this offseason for your personal strategy, you know, for the listeners is be a little bit more open to rostering players that you might not be your favorite or you've made an effort to sell them. Well, maybe you want to buy them back if the situation's changed.
Curtis, you covered a lot there, and we're going to get into more detail about most of those topics. Let's start specifically with player value, and it happens every single season. As soon as week 16 wraps up, we see player value changing. Veterans become essentially like the hot potato that nobody even wants to roster, while every young player, regardless if they put up stats or not, is a player that we want to take a chance on and stick on the end of our roster. We talk a lot about on this show about buying veterans during the off season. Is that something that you found yourself doing typically?
I'll buy any player any time of the year, I guess. I understand that the market is there for veterans in the off season more than during the season, and there's a little bit of deflation that goes on there. The most important thing about buying veterans this time of year is figuring out which ones you ought to be buying, which ones are going to fall off the cliff if you wait just a little bit longer. You know, like a year or two ago, Demaryius Thomas comes to mind. You know, you buy him in January versus June, it was probably the equivalent of saving an early second to go buy him. Where if you buy him right now, the season just happened, and I guess I'm rewinding the clock 2 years, but you buy him right after the season, it's still fresh that he was scoring fantasy points, and he's not 30 yet. He's turning 30 in like 2 or 3 months. So you let some of those things happen. So look at the players that are veterans that are going to hit some of those benchmarks. Age 30 cliff is classic for receivers. People start freaking out there. After age 28 for backs, over the age of 32 for tight ends. Are some good places to kind of rough sort some players where maybe you see some opportunity and then figure out what time of year is going to be right. Are they going to be a free agent? Are they recovering from injury? And that's how you do it. You got to be more specific. You know, I'd feel irresponsible just saying let's go buy all the players over a certain age this time of year.
Yep, good point for sure. What about any changes in positional value? Do you see quarterbacks cheaper in the off season versus regular season or maybe a change at the running back? Have you experienced any of that?
I've experienced it, but I think it's going to be different this year versus years past. You know, every year for the last 3 to 4 years, I think that running backs, if they're over even like the age of 25, would get a little cheaper in the off season and the younger receivers just because of the scoring trends in the league and the lack of weight of quality depth at the top of the running back position caused us to want to move those guys. Like every high performing running back became a classic, like let's sell him and let's get out from under him. But there's so many of those backs that are under the age of 25 that were fantasy contributors and, helped people to playoffs and titles this year. And I see roster balance in the way that people are utilizing the flex position changing a little bit. I think this year you're going to see more insulation at the running back position in the offseason than in years past. That's also because the perception of the incoming rookie crop for 2019 at that position is weaker. So if you don't have people who are naturally going to, ascend out of that draft class, that kind of serves to insulate the incumbents that are in the league. So I think this is a season where I will again be looking to pivot from back to receiver, but I think that's going to be more of a unique approach versus what the majority of the community will be doing. I've seen so many people clamoring to try to buy McCaffrey and Chubb, and those are the sexy guys to own, where just a year or two ago it was everyone wanting to buy Amari Cooper and Corey Davis and the younger crop of receivers. I think if you want to build wide receiver heavy, this is your offseason to do it.
It just kind of dawned on me as you were talking. I wonder, because the tight end market was so strange in 2018, that if there's some owners out there that suffered with, bad tight ends all year, that have said, this offseason I'm going and getting one. I don't care what it costs me. If it's Jared Cook or whoever, I'll give you whatever you need. I'm done with that tight end mess.
Yeah, I mean, I think tight end premium leagues and start two tight ends for sure. And start one tight end, I feel like the market's pretty split. The community's split. A lot of people just kind of ignoring the position. But on tight ends, I think there are buy opportunities for a lot of them. And I'll save some of the names for later in the show. But especially some younger guys that maybe some situational factors caused them not to break out this year.
Well, thinking about buying tight ends, and Curtis, you mentioned a little bit this rookie class. This looks like one of the most stacked tight end rookie classes we've seen in some time, and that maybe even includes the one we saw just a couple of years ago with Ingram and Howard and Joku and Kittle. So let's move to a little bit of rookie talk. I know, of course, we have been doing some work with those rookies. Tell us a little bit about what we've got going at Dynasty Command Center.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, I'd love to talk some rookies with you guys. Obviously, over at Command Center, we've got the Dynasty Command Center Rookie Guide Series. It's a three-parter that we're doing. The pre-combine issue is out right now. In that, we overview the 2019 class, compare that to the 2018 and 2020 classes. We did talk a lot about that on the first episode of the Dynasty Command Center podcast with Travis May just the other day, talking about the tight ends this year. We also looked at available fantasy opportunity grades in the NFL. So we've talked a lot about contracts and coaching situations, but we also get into the depth at each position on each team in the league and where some of those home run spots might be versus some places that you'd really prefer your favorite prospect would avoid. I think we went, 50 players deep for overall rankings, adjusted for super flex, adjusted for tight end premium. We had a 30-player watch list. We had 25 deep on IDP. We even had an article that maybe could serve to teach some lessons from Kyle Francis called Alternate Universe. And, a player that was talked about a lot on the timelines last night during the national title game was Josh Jacobs. And he, for example, wrote an article on what might Jacobs' college career have looked like if he had gone to a smaller school like, Wyoming, and what that would have meant for his statistical profile and how much we would know about him versus kind of just being one of the guys in the room at a perennial power like Alabama. So lots of stuff in there. I feel like I'm more prepared this offseason to talk rookies than any offseason in my dynasty career. And I guess just to come full circle back to the tight ends, we have like 7 or 8 guys in our top 50 at that position, even for the, just tight end premium, not even start two tight end. So that speaks to the quality of depth at that position and also some of the room that's made for them there is the weakness at the running back position.
Yeah. If this is the year, and you kind of alluded to it earlier with your wide receiver versus running back comment, if you're looking for running backs and young ones. This is not the year to stock up on draft picks. It looks like a stacked not only tight end class, but wide receiver class as well. I think a lot of our listeners and a lot of Dynasty players are probably starting fresh. They focus on their Dynasty teams, and maybe they're not watching college football or not paying attention to those upcoming classes at all yet, which is very common. So for a Dynasty player that's listening to this and kind of starting from scratch with that 2019 class, other than checking out our rookie guide at DCC, what else would you suggest they do?
Well, the first thing I would want you to know is I don't think there's a lot of 2019 season saviors in this class. Because it's so wide receiver and tight end heavy with where the quality is, year one breakouts are going to be a little bit fewer and further between than we've seen in recent years. I mean, everyone knows, I mean, running back opportunity is the easiest way to get bang for your buck through the draft and you know, throwing some darts in the later rounds and hoping that an injury occurs. I mean, that doesn't really change for this year, but just the number of names that are available for those spots based off of all the backs that have come in the league over the last couple of years and now hold down those desirable positions, and just the number of backs we even expect to get drafted this year, create some issues. So it's a class you're going to want to be patient with. If you're rebuilding and you have no chance of competing in 2019, I don't mind hoarding some picks, especially throughout up and down the top 18 and building around that, because I really don't think you can go wrong throwing three or four darts in the top round and a half at a handful of receivers. You're going to get some quality there. We feel like there's some guys that kind of can be target hogs and downfield threats and red zone threats. Some guys that maybe we haven't seen in the last couple classes. Some people that maybe are on par with some of those receivers in the historic 2014 class. This is, you know, I'm not going to call this class on par with the 2014 class, but I think we could get some players that are on that level of the OBJs and the Jarvis Landrys of the world that have really become fantasy superstars. We just might have to be patient for a year or two before we see it. That's the main thing that I would say. You got to know that about the 2019 class. The other thing I would say is the longer you wait, if you want to buy picks, the longer you wait, if you're starting fresh, the more expensive those picks get. So if you're going to try to add to your arsenal, you need to do it in the next week or two. As soon as we start getting combine hype and all the NFL declarations are over, it's game time, and it's going to be very difficult to buy picks.
Curtis, it's safe to say that if I asked you who's your vote for 2019 NFL Rookie of the Year offensive, you know, fantasy aside, that you would have less of a shot at getting it right than ever.
I would not make
like
that bet.
Last year you said Barkley. You know, right.
If anyone's health that I cared about was on the line, I would not. Yeah, I would not right. even give you a name. It is Ryan and Travis May and I talked about this the other day, and it's just like, I mean, all three of us. I mean, I feel like we typically see players the same way. We can't even agree on who the top wide receiver is at this juncture. It's a good and a bad thing. It's bad right now because we can't say, you know, it's not like, you know, Leonard Fournette or Saquon Barkley or some of these players we've had in years past where there's pretty much a consensus. If you've got the 101, it's worth X, and he's definitely going to be a top 20 startup value from the time he enters the league. I really don't know that that's the case. But because of that, it offers some opportunity to move around. And if you do land on some guys that you like, if you read our publication and find who we like and who you're comfortable with, gather those picks up, and you can feel pretty good about the collection that you amassed there.
Curtis, let's hit a couple other off-season topics that Dynasty owners just have to be on top of. Let's start with the waiver wire. I think it's crucial to manage the waiver wire throughout the off-season. There's news that you were kind of alluding to earlier. There's breaking news almost nonstop at this point throughout the off-season, whether it's how these coaching hires might impact players, and then once we get into free agency, then it's really all going to bust loose. So in general, and you can give us some specific names, or you can just talk in generalities, who are some players that you would typically drop this time of year? Are you getting rid of some of those older players that you might have hung on to, or Are you giving up on any specific roster cloggers this time of year?
Yeah, but the only category of player that I typically will give up on, and of course, I would preface this with what's the roster settings of your league. I mean, if it's like a 30-man roster league, it doesn't really make sense to drop people right now, because pretty much anyone you drop is going to be scooped up right away. But if it's a shallower league or a more traditional league with like 20 to 24 players, you know, somebody like Alan Hearns, starting to get into the middle of what should be his prime, and he's probably, you know, at this point not looking like a player that will ever get targets in Dallas. He had a prime opportunity, didn't really take off with it this year. Now he's got a gruesome injury to come back from. Amari Cooper's in town. Gallup's only going to be a year older and more mature and aware of what his expectations are in the offense for him. So that's the type of player I'm looking at, or just an ancient guy who was more NFL valuable than fantasy valuable, like Darren Sproles. I mean, God love him. I think I'm the same age as him, and he's out there doing it back there. But even with the opportunities that he got, I mean, we weren't really starting him anywhere, and he's fun to watch, and it's a fun story, and I love that he came back from that. But he's just not somebody that I can see in any situation ever making my lineup, even if like the situation changed with the Eagles. In a really shallow league, I start to look at what quarterbacks might I have picked up just to block opponents. A name like Blake Bortles, I don't know what he's going to be and what's his situation next year. Like in a 20-man league, I'm not holding on to Blake Bortles. Let somebody else waste a roster spot on him. Or somebody like Nick Mullins, who was viable during the season. But now, I mean, we know Jimmy G's getting the job back, and if somebody else wants to waste that spot on Mullins, go ahead and let him. Those are the types of players that I'm typically going to churn. Otherwise, I like to be patient because I probably added that player for a reason.
What about like Wilson in San Francisco with McKinnon coming back and Breed is ahead of him?
Yeah, I think it's just the depth of the league. Wilson, I probably wouldn't be too patient with because, you know, I expect McKinnon to get a shot if he's right. And I do think Breida is a better talent than Wilson. I mean, I think that's probably not up for debate based off of what they each did with their opportunities. If it's like a, you know, again, if it's 28 to 30 guys, doesn't make a lot of sense to cut him until you're bringing your rookie pick in and then he's forced off your roster. But, you know, 20, 24 guys, yeah, I'm probably going to cut bait with somebody like Jeffrey Wilson.
All right, let's kind of go to the opposite end of that spectrum. Who are some players that you're looking on your waiver wire to see if you can stash at the end of your bench this time of year? Any specifics?
Yeah, I like to find players who popped a little bit, but then just something went wrong during the season. It might have been team-based, or maybe they had an injury and they're a little younger or a different situation than like what we talked about with Alan Hearns. So somebody like, I mean, this is a name that how many times has this been mentioned on Dynasty Podcast? Breshad Perriman. Okay, he's in a new situation. he showed that he can be a situational deep threat in the league. And I don't know if Cleveland's going to re-sign him for next year, but if I had
he'll
to
be
start
an NFL player though.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably going to stick. He's going to stick now. And if he stays in Cleveland, especially if you got to start 10 or 11 players, I could see some weeks where, you know, Perriman could probably make your lineup. You just hope that he scores the long touchdown, kind of like Travis Benjamin a year or two ago. Somebody like CJ Uzoma, who could end up, you know, I think he's a free agent, and really all the guys in Cincinnati might turn over there. But he looked like he had some ability, and then we had to go to Driscoll, and the team kind of just fell apart. But if he were to get re-signed, you know, you can probably pencil him in for 70, 80 targets in as big of a mess as tight end is, especially in a premium or start two. If somebody gets impatient with Uzoma, he's a type of player that I would add. Or somebody in shallower leagues like Albert Wilson, who looked awesome before he went down. But now Gase is gone. Miami situation is going to be different. He could really be useful next season. But, you know, again, it's so hard giving waiver wire advice because every league is different. You know, and what does that pool look like? And is it true, you know, first come, first serve? Or are you bidding on those players? So the best thing that you can do if you're confused about what to do in that is find some trusted analysts that might take an extra minute or two to understand your situation before you cut him. You know, I think it was Brian Malone that told me this one time, but, you know, the waiver wire is basically like making a trade. You know, and even if you have an empty spot, and this is something that me and TJ Calkins talk about all the time, if you have an empty spot, you're still making a trade. You know, the roster spot is worth something. So the player you're going to put on your roster needs to be worthy of that spot, especially in the off season, because as soon as you got that player on there, maybe you're, you know, now you got to make a trade the next time. So think about it that way. It's not just as simple as adding the name to the end of your roster. It needs to be a little bit more of an intensive process. So you can add people like me or Ryan, or you can join something like Dynasty Command Center, or, you know, maybe you have just a group of friends you like to talk to about Dynasty. Bounce those things off of each other with waivers, because it really is situational based.
Yeah, let's finish up today with Dynasty, the trade market, which, and that's situational based in a lot of circumstances as well, but it's probably the most discussed, at least maybe the most important thing you can really focus on in the off season as you build your team. So how does your overall trading strategy alter in the off season?
So I kind of alluded to it I guess I didn't allude to it. I mentioned it at the top of the pod. I try to spend a couple minutes with every team in my portfolio. What are the needs? And my trade strategy is going to be different for each team based off of what rookie capital I have. I mean, what are the things that I have that I think are desirable assets, and what are the realistic goals for that team in the next season? So if this has been a playoff team that is a true competitor and it's not stuck in like that purgatory of, you know, praying to be a wild card, I'm probably going to be aggressive. And I've already talked about the fact that I don't see a lot of year one fantasy impact players per se in this class. So if I find a team where I'm in a title window and I have a lot of rookie picks, probably moving those picks for established players. Conversely, if I have a team that maybe struggled to make the playoffs or missed, and it's a little veteran heavy, like maybe I was loading up this year and I fell short, I'm going to move those players for the picks and kickstart the rebuild. So it is situational based, but it's like if you want to buy property or something, a bank's going to look at what are the assets you have to put up for that. And you know, they're going to assess you on that basis. So if I want to buy players, I got to assess my team and the other teams. What are the things that we could exchange? After you look at your own team, you got to look at your competitors and who are the teams that look like they could be good trade partners. And then you just start the dialogue. You don't even have to talk players first. Just, hey, it's the off season now. Looks like our teams might be, you know, complementary. Let's see if we can work something out that works for both of us ahead of the draft. And just kind of starting and letting that process be organic, especially if it's somebody that, you know, you have a trade history with.
So it sounds like that's kind of your process for determining which players are buys or sells, or as well as seeking out those trade partners. You mentioned this earlier in the show, so we'll wrap up with this. And I know you said that every player is a buy or a sell depending on the circumstances and obviously depending on the price. But let's put some names in these categories. Who are some players with the season now in the rearview mirror? Who are some players that you would be aggressively pursuing as in that trade market as a buy?
So in Superflex, if it can be done, I would definitely be willing to pay up for Baker Mayfield. What he did this year is unprecedented as a rookie, obviously setting some records, and he didn't even get to start every game. I think the guy's just going to be a rocket ship, and I think he's approaching – I would expect him to approach top six maybe in Dynasty quarterback rankings when January ADP data comes out. But by this time next year, I'd be shocked if he's not top three or four. So it's, you know, sometimes you just buy players on the way up, and, you know, you pay more for them today than you did a month ago, but it's still less than it'll be 12 months from now. Moving on to running back.
You'd rather have them than Wilson or Rodgers or Newton or those type of guys that have been at the top?
I think I'd rather have him than Newton for sure at this point. I mean, you got the injury concerns, and I'm not really sure that the way they're structuring that offense is as big for him in fantasy anymore. Yeah, I think in the right situation, I might start preferring Baker to Aaron Rodgers, especially if there can be a balancing piece there. age considerations. And I mean, at this point, can you find anyone that doesn't believe in Baker Mayfield's talent? I mean, I can't find that guy other than, you know, what Colin Cowherd, I think, is likes to push the button there. But I don't have any leagues that I'm playing with Colin. So so Baker's a guy that I would aggressively buy. Maybe an aggressive sell right now. And Matt, maybe you can chime in here because it's a Steeler. But I hate that the Steelers moved on from James Saxon. And because of that, Connor is kind of a glaring sell for me right now. They started to use a little bit more of a committee approach there. And Saxon, I think, has really been the driving force between running back usage there. We saw that they maintained the same type of running back usage even after Haley left. And if you go back and look at some of the teams that Saxon's been the running back coach for, Kansas City and Minnesota and Miami, and it was all during the time periods when we had big-time fantasy bell cows there. And so I'm a little concerned about Connor, and he crept into top 12 running back territory, I think, in December, and I don't expect that will have changed very much for January. What do you think about Connor moving forward?
Yeah, I also think there's a chance they sign Latavius Murray, Jay Ajayi, Ware, somebody like that, as opposed to adding another rookie. I could see them gumming things up a little bit in the offseason. I think Connor's been a little bit of a sell anyways. I think he's kind of in slightly above average talent, and I think it's a good point there with the position coach change too.
Well, I liked him. He was a buy for me even mid-season on the way up, but it just goes to show you it just takes a little bit of a situational change and a change in market value to make a player fall into a different category. So, but if enough people feel the same way that I do, you know, 6 weeks from now it could be a buy again. You know, it's a roller coaster.
Right.
It's a roller coaster with these guys and it's dynamic.
Everyone
market.
Just listen now. He's cheap.
So wide receivers, Ryan, you mentioned James Washington earlier. That's probably my favorite speculative target right now. And it's a little cheaper to do business there than on some of these other guys. Just on the off chance that AB is out of town. Geez, the opportunity for Washington would be huge. I think something approaching Juju's 2017 season where, you know, he had a lot of efficiency, but maybe not the target volume. I could see Washington fitting into a role like that, especially considering his skill set being a little bit more suited to intermediate and deeper down the field routes. And that, I think there would be a hole there if Antonio Brown were to leave. So I have no problem being a little aggressive, maybe paying a pair of seconds for Washington or a late first for Washington and a third or something like that. I think are trades that I'd be comfortable with, you know, and that might be a player that people feel like they overdrafted this season. You got a little bit of a window there at tight end. How about Mike Gesicki? Adam Gase is gone. Never really figured out tight end. Everyone thinks that, you know, the tight end class is fantastic, but maybe what about a guy that now has some chops in the league and it's not all brand new for, and he was a younger prospect anyway. Can have a change at OC. I don't mind throwing a dart at somebody like that. I mean, athletically, he's up there in the upper echelon of what we have seen for tight ends at the combine in recent memory. And nothing has really, I mean, if he was in this tight end class, I think he would be right up near the top after the combine anyway, as he would compare to some of these guys. So what do you think about Gesicki, Ryan?
I love the Gesicki call. I mean, he was my tight end one in this class. This time last year, and we've seen many of these rookies really impress, and many of them in surprising fashion. Ian Thomas, Chris Herndon, guys like that. And I guess I've really been shocked that so many people that I've interacted with on Twitter and other places are just ready to throw in the towel on Gesicki. So to me, he's an easy buy. Not only a player I like, but his value and his price has dropped, and that's a good combination for me. All right, guys, I think that's going to do it today. Curtis, you have us ready for the off season. Great stuff from you. We're ready for rookie drafts. We're ready to attack that waiver wire and be aggressive in the trade market as well. Before we go here, let's just tell our listeners where they can find your work.
Yeah, sure. So the big place to find my stuff right now is with Dynasty Command Center. Lots of energy and effort going into our rookie analysis. So if you haven't heard of us, or maybe you heard of us last time that I was on with you guys earlier in the season, DynastyCommandCenter.com tells you kind of what's within our range of service offerings. The main thing is the Slack. Slack is an app where you can communicate, and there's a lot of different channels, and people like me and Ryan and Travis May, Tom Kislingberry on the IDP side, and others, we run different channels of content. So you might want to talk about trades or waivers, or what do you think about players, team strategy, startup draft help, even on the clock startup draft help. So it's a community where we all help each other, and you have direct access to some of your favorite dynasty analysts around the clock, day in, day out. And it's really just been fun to watch that community grow. We even ended up hiring one of our members to become an analyst recently, Scott Connor, and he's just done a fantastic job with roster composition, and some of his recommendations have been great. You'll hear him on the Dynasty Command Center pod to come. And then you got to check out the Rookie Guide series. You can read about that on the website as well. I mentioned earlier that Volume 1, the pre-combine edition, is out right now. We will release Volume 2 about a week after the NFL Combine, with updated rankings, tiers, additional article-based analysis, and always trying to make that highly applicable. I think we had 6 different contributors in Volume 1. That'll probably even go up for Volume 2. And then Volume 3, you get about a week after the NFL Draft, just in time for many of your rookie drafts. $19.99 gets all 3 copies. You pay once, we send them to you as they're done. So make sure you check that out at dynastycommandcenter.com, and always willing to engage with you on Twitter as well, at CPatrickNFL.
All right. Thanks again, Curtis. Great stuff from you. We'll be back next time with more Dynasty Blueprint.